$600 a month. Stuart saved even more.
When we first joined MediShare, we were immediately going from a little over $1,600 a month down to $460 basically a month.
So that's wonderful, but then his wife needed emergency surgery and the bills added up to $160,000.
So we were seeing the bills coming in, and then the bills were being paid. Portions were being shared, and the end result of this is this bill was taken care of.
Yes, MediShare works, and it's so easy to get your questions answered, too, so why not? You can call right now, 833-39-BIBLE. That's 833-39-BIBLE, 833-39-BIBLE.
One restaurant's decision to refuse service to the White House press secretary is impacting other restaurants. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes explains.
Several restaurants in the Northeast that have the same name as that Lexington, Virginia restaurant that refused service to Sarah Sanders over the weekend say they've been getting threats now in the wake of it. A Washington, D.C. restaurant called the Red Hen is one of them. Michael Friedman owns it.
It started just with negative comments and then just worked into death threats and vandalizing the restaurant.
Friedman saying the Italian restaurant in Northwest D.C. was egged over the weekend and is also getting threats and insults on its social media platforms. And it's been happening at other restaurants that go by the name of the Red Hen in New York and New Jersey as well. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
PetSmart sued a paid animal rights activist for allegedly infiltrating the pet store chain to collect footage of the company's practices and employees. The footage was then posted on PETA's YouTube channel. This is USA Radio News.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
With reaction to our top story, former Congressman Jason Chaffetz talks about what this travel ban being upheld means for you.
I think it'll give the president more authority to go after certain countries where we can't vet people. Remember, we got people coming from all over the world, and they need to be able to be there on the ground and vet these people before they come in. Some of them are going to take 60 or 90 days, which the president was asking for, but somehow the Democrats were fighting against that and filing suits, and you had some rogue judges going the wrong direction, but this will help clarify it.
When is the best time to ask for a raise, and what is the best way to go about it without sabotaging yourself? Robert Hershovic of Shark Tank has some great advice if you're looking for that raise.
You know, most businesses, 8 to 10%, you always do better negotiating something over a term. If you came in asking for 12% today, but you hope one day to make 30%, and could I show you a path to get there?
Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar was testifying earlier today on Capitol Hill regarding prescription drug affordability.
In Medicare Part D, HHS will work to give private plans the market-based tools that they need to negotiate better deals with drug companies. Part D is a tremendously successful program, but it has not kept pace with innovations in the private marketplace.
For all of these stories and many more, please remember, check us out online at usaradio.com. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
USA Radio News.
Today, by a 5-4 margin, the Supreme Court of the United States upheld President Trump's travel ban. The president reacted to the ruling.
The ruling shows that all of the attacks from the media and the Democrat politicians are wrong, and they turned out to be very wrong. And what we're looking for as Republicans, I can tell you, is strong borders, no crime.
Representative Maxine Waters has been in the news because she's calling for protests of Trump administration officials, and both parties are coming out and speaking on this, including Democratic Congressman Tim Ryan, who says enough is enough.
I think it's inappropriate for any of us to condone any kind of political harassment. I think we've got to start getting to some higher ground here.
That audio courtesy of Fox News, and we're hearing that 17 states and the District of Columbia are suing the Trump administration over separation of families at the border. This is USA Radio News.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along, which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/hire. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. So, while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. It's the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/hire. That's ZipRecruiter.com/hire. ZipRecruiter.com/hire.
Hello, this is Joe Peters with Real Estate Matters, and today is Tuesday, the 26th of, I'm just double checking that date, I believe it's the 26th. Hang in there, bear with me. It's Tuesday the 26th. It's a little bit after 4 o'clock, and we're in scenic downtown Flemington, New Jersey. Going to play a commercial or two and then give you the weather, and we'll be back and get this show kicked off.
This is Georgine Trinkle. I want to invite you to listen to Hot and Hunterd In every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. You'll be treated to discussions on hot topics every week. Hot and Hunterd In provides a more in-depth look at issues that are happening right now. You can catch the show live and call in on what matters to you. Make sure to download the podcast to catch up on all our hot topics.
So they're asking me to give you the weather. I'm going to use my handy-dandy Android. And the weather says right now at exactly 4.09 p.m. on the 26th of June in scenic downtown Flemington, year is 2018, it is 80 degrees. It's sort of muggy and overcast, a little sun poking through. It's going to be 79 overnight, so we're not going to get much relief. A little thunderstorm in the morning. It's going to be 85 tomorrow. On Friday, we're going to be up to 91, and on Saturday, we're going to be up to 95. On Sunday, July 1st, could you believe it's July 1st, 95 again. So we're getting into some hot and muggy days coming up. So enjoy this cool spell, even though it's not all that cool, at 80 degrees, because it's not going to last. Be right back.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterd In Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdin-chamber.org. You're listening to WHCR-DB, Hunterd In Chamber Radio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterd In County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody just
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
So once again, it's Joe Peters of Coldwell Banker. I'm a residential real estate expert, and I sell across both Somerset and Hunterdon County. I've been doing this for 15 years and an additional five as an investor. So I help people achieve their goals and dreams. I'd love to help you, and I will give you my contact information throughout the show. Today's show, I've just brought a bunch of selected pieces of material along to talk about that you sort of get into when you're selling your house or getting ready to sell your house or even buying a house. And the first one's pretty germane to all of us, and that's the inside workings of credit scores. I published this last week. It's a really interesting article. It states that consumers are encouraged to check their credit scores once a year. A lot of your credit cards today give you the credit score every time you log in, so it's pretty easy to do. The primary reason for doing this is to make sure there aren't any mistakes. Unfortunately, credit reports are prone to contain mistakes. It's not really the fault of the free credit repositories, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion, because all three are just a database. Whatever is reported to them is what you see. Further, someone with a similar name can show up on someone else's report. If you're not Bob Smith, the only Bob Smith in town, this is certainly possible. It's a little more scientific than that, but I think encouraging people to look at it on a daily basis is a little overkill, but an annual basis is not enough. I subscribe because one of the companies that I used to work for reported that their database was breached, and they paid for me to subscribe. And I think I use Experian, but Equifax and TransUnion and others all have the same thing. And what it does is if there, and you can set parameters up, and this is like a $15 a month thing. If your credit card goes above 20% of the balance, and you can set that percentage to whatever you want, you'll get an email the next morning saying your credit balance exceeded 20%, and you've asked us to notify you. You can also tell you when it goes down. You can also tell when there's any other kinds of suspicious activity on your credit report, and it will send you – it's a credit monitoring system. I also use a fraud protection system so that it's an ID protection service that watches both Marilyn and my credit scores, our checking and savings accounts, and it tells you if anything. So you can set an alarm system up to tell you if something's gone wrong on your credit, but why do you want to do this? Well, from a couple of reasons. The very first reason is your credit is the way you're going to buy your next car or house or anything you buy when you don't pay cash. You've got to have a good credit score. If you're into the 700s, you're probably into a medium to upper range credit score. If you're above 750, you've got excellent credit. If you're 600s or less, you probably need a little work on it. And if you're below 650, you probably need a lot of work on it. I've seen people as low as fives and fours, but your credit score, or FICO, and that stands for, I don't know if I've got it in front of me, but it stands for the how the credit report works. And let me give you some tips on it. Have you ever wondered how these scores are calculated in the first place? They follow an algorithm first developed by the FICO company years ago. For a while, credit scores weren't the primary force behind a credit decision, but over time, the impact of a credit score has become more and more important. Most every loan program available today has a minimum credit score, and if a score falls below the minimum, then there's some additional work that needs to be done in order to get those scores back on track. There are five characteristics of your credit report that make up the three-digit score: your payment history, your account balances, how long you've had credit, the types of credit used, and how often you've applied for new credit over the past couple of years. Credit scores can range from 300 to 850. Let's say a borrower has a credit score of 600, but needs a 620 to qualify for a particular loan. Credit scores will improve much more quickly by paying attention to two categories that have the fastest and the most immediate impact on a score: payment history and account balances. Payment history accounts for 35% payment history accounts for 35% of your total credit score, and the account balance is 30%. When somebody makes a payment more than 30 days past the due date, not one day, 30 days past the due date, scores will fall. An occasional late pay won't really do much damage to a score, but continued payments made more than 30, 60, or 90 days past the due date will definitely do that. And by stopping late payment scores, your credit score will late payment scores will begin to recover. Account balances. Companies, let me stay on the late payments. I know every once in a while I'll miss a payment. I check all my credit balances on a periodic basis to make sure that something didn't get charged that I don't know about. Even though I've got this reminder, I'm just sort of anal about keeping my credit where it needs to be. And I had a little $10 charge on a credit card that I forgot, I didn't know, so I didn't pay it. And when I saw it, I went and I made an immediate payment, and it was like a day late. So I called the credit company, and they said, look, it's got to be 30 days late, but we'll fix your credit score because we know you make all of your payments on time. You can't discriminately make payments when you want to make them, and you cannot make payments for less than the amount billed as a minimum payment amount, or your credit score is going to take a hit. What you've got to do is understand that, as they said, it's 35% of your credit score is how you make your payments. You need to make them on time. You need to make at least the minimum amount due, and you need to do that on an ongoing basis. If you get into this habit, your credit score will improve, and you'll be amazed how quickly it will go up. But that's only one item of your credit score. For instance, when we do just a rental, we check the credit score. That's one item. We're checking a few things on a rental application, but one is the credit score. We want to make sure they're making their payments on time. And what a landlord will do is look at your last year's payment history and see if you're obviously making payments beyond the date that they are due. And even though you may only make it a day or two late, it will show up that there's one late payment. It's really not a ding on your credit score until it's 30 days late beyond the due date. But people want to make sure they're going to get paid. Pretty natural. If I was renting an apartment, I'd want to make sure the person applying to me was going to pay their bills on time. And the first thing I would check is that they're paying their other bills on time. Account balances compared to outstanding loan balances with credit lines. So what that means, if a credit card is a $10,000 credit line and there's a $3,000 balance, scores will actually improve. The ideal balance to limit is about one-third of the credit line. As the balance grows and approaches the limit, scores will begin to fall, even though the account balance should the account balance exceed the limit. This category contributes 30%. So 35% to payment history and another 30. So 65 or two-thirds of your credit score is between payment history and account balances. Now, I know how, because I used to work in the software for retailers, and we were always working on credit worthiness for our credit card business. And if somebody misses a payment, and it happens, the thing gets stuck in the mailbag. We used to mail things. Today, mostly, most payments are done electronically. It can happen, and they will forgive a late payment, but they won't forgive a lot of late payments because there's no excuse for that. And believe me, when you go for a mortgage, they're going to look back 3 years, if not more, and ask you why this payment was late. You've got to make your payments on time. Secondly, you can't use up more than a third of your credit balance without affecting your credit score. And that's on any one account and in general. You may have five accounts each with $10,000 worth of credit. If one of those has been run up past a third, it's going to hurt your score a little. If all of them have been run up past a third, it's going to affect your score even more so. I'll just give you a good example. I had a customer come to me, and he said, I've got $65,000 in cash. I'm credit worthy. Well, when we went to do the mortgage check on that customer, we found out, yeah, he did have the cash, but he had maxed out all his credit cards. He was paying more proportionately than he had the ability to pay on minimal credit card balances. And people get into that trap. And what happens is, as you get beyond certain limits with your credit card interest kickers come in. You'll find that when you first signed up, there's a bunch of rules, and you agreed to abide by those rules, but you never read them, because whoever reads the fine print. But for example, if you have an account more than X days past due, your interest may go up in general. If you have a lot of accounts that are more than X percent of their balances, they may have the right to raise your interest rates again. And pretty soon, you're paying all interest and no principal. Take a look at what's on your credit account. And when you get the credit card bill, it says if you make just a minimum payment, it's going to take you 7 years to pay off this bill. If you just made the minimum payment plus $10, you'd probably cut that number in half. A good policy is to understand that a credit card is a temporary loan, so you don't have to carry cash. And when you charge something on a credit card, you should make every attempt, if you want to have an excellent credit score, to pay that balance off, total balance, by the end of month. It's not a bank. It's an expensive way to borrow money, usually 15 to maybe in a 30 percentile, and that's expensive. So, we talked about two. The remaining three, the first one was payment history. The second was account balances. The third, remaining three anyway, have relatively little impact. However, they all add up to something. How long someone has used a credit account for 15% of your score? In other words, if you've had credit for 35 years, they realize, and those accounts are still open and in good standing, you're probably not going to be a problem to somebody new. But types of credit inquiries, credit and credit inquiries make up another 10%. And by consolidating your payment history and account balances, scores will improve significantly over the next few months. So what we're saying is there's a science to this. When you borrow money on a credit card, you should make every attempt to pay that credit card off by the end of the month. If you don't, if it's a month, and I'm in a business where some months has more money in a checking account than others, you should make it an every attempt to pay it off in the next few months. You've got to keep the payments current, And you've got to make sure that your balance is not more than one-third of the credit. If you have a $10,000 credit line, your balance shouldn't be above $3,300 on that account. If you have a $50,000 over five cards or 10 cards, well, then one-third is the rule of thumb. You should never exceed that, or your credit is going to start to suffer. So then we talk about different kinds of credit cards or accounts. If you go out and borrow money on a car, nobody expects you to pay it off early, although some people do. In most cases, you'll borrow for 60 months, $30,000 to buy a medium-priced car, and your payment is going to be, let's say, $400 a month for 60 months. You're going to pay the first month $400, and your bill is going to go down by, or your total that you owe is going to go down by about $50, not $400, because a lot of it went to interest. But as you pay more and more months into it, the last bill is going to be just the opposite, $50 towards interest and $350 towards the principal. So the name of the game is to get things paid off, but there's two kinds of loans that you typically have to have, and they're called different types of loans than credit cards, and one is your car payment and one is your mortgage payment. You could also have a revolving is what the first type was that we talked about, but you could have a loan where you went and borrowed $5,000 to do some work on a house. And that loan requires you to pay $500 a month for 10 years. So you can have accounts like that. They count differently. The credit score is important as you move along. It's also important for a lot of other companies will check your credit score. I'm told even your insurance companies check your credit score when you first apply. You want to keep your credit in check, or else you're going to be paying more interest for things because your credit is not where it needs to be. So, why should you care? You don't want to pay more interest. You want to pay any interest that you don't have to, because that's all the profit going to the banks or the credit card companies. And you also need your credit score when you apply for that next big thing. That next big thing might be a job. That next big thing may be a background check. That next big thing may be a car payment or a mortgage on a new house or a line of credit so you can fix up the house you're in. So much on credit. The only thing I can say in closing is that it is key, and you've got to keep your eye on it. And in effect, if you don't, you're going to pay more for things. So we've got a whole bunch of other things to talk about today. Emerging trends that threaten housing. Household growth has increased over the last 3 years. Millennials are stepping up, and home prices have recovered from the recession lows. So what is there to worry about? Not much on the surface, but there are some emerging trends that suggest good times won't continue much longer in the housing market. I quite honestly don't agree with that. I think we're seeing a wave. We're seeing it going at least 24 months out without any recession in sight. But let's finish what this article talks about, because perhaps there's some things I will agree with. Rising housing costs. According to the latest Joint Center for Housing Studies from Harvard University, the cost of housing has outpaced incomes to some point that almost one-third, or 38 million U.S. households, are cost burdened, meaning they pay more than 30% or more of their incomes, that's gross incomes, in 2016. And worse, 47% of the renter households, or 28 million, are paying more than 50% of their household income. So when you go for a credit check on a mortgage, they have a front-end check and they have a back-end check on your gross and what your payments are. The front-end check says, how much are you going to pay towards this mortgage that you're applying for? And when you pay for rent, it's the same thing. They just allow a little bigger percentage. But 30 is a good rule of thumb on both. So if you earn $50,000 and you took 30% of that $50,000 gross and you divided it by 12, you can afford to spend $1,250, which doesn't buy you much in Hunterdon County or Somerset County. But that's the way the system works. And if, in effect, you are married, well, then both couples can put their gross into it. And unlike in days gone by, women aren't penalized because they might have a baby. The gross from the couple counts. So maybe both make 50 each, and now you have 100,000. You can afford 2,500 a month. But that 2,500 a month, 30% of your gross, is all that's allowed for the mortgage and interest and the taxes, any homeowner's insurance, and that's what your mortgage payment consists of. Interest, principal, taxes, and other expenses like insurance. Then they do a back-end check, and they say, wait a minute, the mortgage isn't the only thing that people borrow for. They also probably have a car, and they also probably have a student loan if they're a millennial, and they also have maybe a credit card or two. Hopefully that's all they have. So they add all of those things up, and they have what they call a background check, a back-end check, not background, back-end check. And that should be 43% or less. You can pay a little more interest and have it a little bit higher than that, but let's say 30% towards the house, another 5% towards the car, maybe 5% towards student, a couple of credit cards. They don't want you to be paying out more than 43% of your gross, or you're out of proportion. And if somebody is going to lend you that money, and that depends on a lot of things, your payment history and the account balances and all the things we talked about, but that is going to be what they're going to check on. And I don't care how much money you got in the bank, if you're at a 60% back end, there is no loan coming your way. You can't possibly keep it up, and the longer you get at it, the worse it's going to get, because if you do slip behind on payments, you're going to see some of your interest rates going up. So the other thing we're looking at is tepid wage growth. This article is a little out of line because this has improved, but while there's been growth in wages in recent years, it hasn't kept up with inflation, and certainly hasn't kept up with housing. The real median income housing, bottom quartile, increased only by 3% between 88 and 2016, while the median income for adults age 25 to 34 rose by 5%. Meanwhile, the median home price grew 41% faster than inflation between 90 and 2000. So median rent grew 20% faster. Adding insult to injury, 2.5 million rental units priced below $800 serving households earning up to $32,000 were lost between 90 and 2016. So what we're saying here is that the moderate priced housing is disappearing. This is why we have such a shortage at the low end of the market, and that wage is not in keeping up with inflation, and it's not keeping up with the rising price of houses. Since I work for myself, I can't tell you what an average raise is, but I would think an average raise is a cost of living raise, and it's probably somewhere around 2 or 3%. If you get a merit increase because you've done exceedingly well and you're getting promoted, well, then that's something different. What they're saying is those 2 and 3% cost of livings aren't keeping up with inflation and aren't keeping up with housing. Let's take a look at entry-level housing, because that's a great example about how this works. An entry-level house is probably going to run you in Hunterdon County somewhere around $250,000. That's a basic 100 by 100 lot, 2 to 3 bedroom, standalone, not really elegant house. And you're probably not in the desirable areas. You're probably in the outskirts into the more rural areas. And it's not like it's not elegant, but it's not where most people want to live. So in order to afford a $250,000 house, and there's not many of them, two things are happening. Interest keeps going up. It went from 4% to 4.75% just this year alone. It's only in the sixth month of the year. Probably going to get a little over 5% before the year is over. If it merely goes from 4% to 5%, you're going to lose 9% of your buying power. So if you could afford a $500,000 house at the first of the year, and at the end of the year, interest has gone from 4% to 5%, you can only afford a $455,000. But it's a 1-2 punch. The first is interest is going up, and the second is that housing prices is going up. The more popular the price point, the faster the increase in housing. I argue that you're probably seeing 5% to 6% increases in housing. And if you add the 5% or 6% to the 9%, now you're up to about a 15% difference, and it's not a $455,000 house you can afford versus a $500,000 at the beginning of the year. When you combine the two in a 1-2 punch, it's more like a $425,000. That's what's causing the rush in real estate. We have many, many people realizing that I need to get into a house, and we aren't building any entry-level housing, and we do not have a lot of entry-level housing. On top of that, we're seeing people not moving up the way they used to. The people in their 50s to 60s usually buy one more big house. They buy that dream house once the kids are in college or gone, and they live in that for 10 or 15 years before they think about downsizing. What's happened is, and these are your early age baby boomers. The late age baby boomers are retiring already. So the early age baby boomers, 45 to 55, are not making that last trade up. They're probably in a $400,000, $450,000 house. 10 years ago, before the recession, they might have bought a $600,000 or $700,000 house and really enjoyed it. I know we did. But today they're not, and they're not doing it for several reasons. The first reason is it's not deemed as a good investment anymore. House prices in the 600 and up are not rising. Secondly, the new tax restrictions, to some extent, are not helping that corner of the market. So they're saying, well, look, if the house isn't going to rise in value and I'm not going to get any tax advantage out of it over what I have today, maybe I shouldn't do it. And as a result, they're not. And as a result of that, the person that would buy their 450 isn't putting his on the market at 3.25% because there's no houses to buy. And the person that would buy his 3.25% can't find any because there's no houses available. And they're continuously out. We'll go 4, 5, 6 offers before we get one to stick to the wall anymore. Those are totally accepted into attorney review, and then a better offer comes along and knocks it out. The next thing they talk about is income inequality. New report from the National Low Income Housing attests that there's not one state, county, or metropolitan area in the entire United States where full-time workers earning federal minimum wage of 7.25 an hour can afford a modest two-bedroom apartment. They need 3 times that amount, $22 an hour, to afford a modest two-bedroom rental. That's absolutely correct. Pennsylvania earns 7.25 an hour. New Jersey, if I remember the numbers, is like 960 something. We're talking about $11 an hour, and we'll probably move. They're talking about 15, but we won't move in one jump. We'll probably move to 10 and to 11 over a couple of years, and we can absorb that. But according to real estate analyst John Burns, the problem is shrinking middle class, which is diminishing demand for medium-priced housing. Amongst the households headed by those under 65, middle-income households plunged from 57% in the 70s to 45% today, a decline of 12%. The result has been a 7% increase in the percentage of households that earn more than double the U.S. median, from 12% in 70 to 19 in 76, and a 4% increase in the percentage of households who earn less than 80% of the median, from 31% in 1970 to 35. So what this income inequality is saying, there's more people with more money and there's less more people with less money at the same time. The middle class is disappearing. Then we have the complication of the seniors, and I are one, so I can understand this. Millennials form the average of 2.1 million net new households annually in 2012 for 2017. But despite being larger in numbers, they're forming fewer households than the older generations. Over the past 10 years, the number of older households grew by 7 million, rising from 1 in 5 households to 1 in 4. By 2035, one in every 3 households will be at least 65 years old. The oldest homeowners move into care facilities or pass on, then eventually won't be enough buyers for senior homes because younger household formation hasn't kept up. So think about that. I know I've heard that the next generation from the seniors who are the bought the original 55 pluses over the last 15 years, they're going to sell them to the end of the baby boomers who are starting to retire. But that generation is about half the size. It's really saying the same thing but different. Over past 10 years, the number of older households grew by 7 million. And one out of every 3 households will be at least 65 years old by 2035. And as the older homeowners move into care facilities pass on, there eventually won't be enough buyers for senior homes because the younger household formation hasn't kept up. We're just not forming households. Some of the things we're doing differently are we're not getting married until our mid to late 30s. We're having one, maybe two children. We don't need the size house or want the type of house that we wanted 10 or 20 years ago, at least the generation. A generation is typically 20-plus years. So if we don't want a center hall colonial with 4 bedrooms, why in the name of God are we still building them? Well, the answer is we are building what the people wanted 20 years ago, and we haven't corrected this. But they're selling. Because there is enough market, because we haven't built much at all in the last 10 years for center hall colonials. But that market will not last. And if it does, it means the older existing center hall colonials will be harder and harder to sell. We're already seeing that in Hunterdon County. If we get above $650 in Hunterdon County as far as a price, it's a soft market. We're seeing pressure on it. And it's because people don't want that big of a house. They don't want to live that far from New York. They're not having enough same... They're not having 3 and 4 children. They don't need a house of that size, but we're still, what we are building, are still building there. But the correction that I'm seeing is we're building more and more rental properties. Good example, just above the library in Clinton, we put up a rental property, 3 or 4 floors high, probably got 100 so units in it. They went immediately. They're small, 8 to 1,200 square foot rentals. You don't get any parking. There's no indoor parking, just outdoor, I believe, in that facility. Some of them are for income restricted. We have to set aside about 15% of anything new for income restricted. But most of them are free market rentals, and they're being rented to people who are abandoning their large house by selling it and moving into a more carefree, stress-free environment. We did it. We sold our big 4,300 square foot house in Clinton Township. Still live in Clinton Township. It's a great township to live in. But we sold our mega mansion. There was just two of us in a 4,300 square foot house. Believe it or not, we used to call each other on the phone because we couldn't find each other. That's how ridiculous it was. It was like we could afford it, so we did it. But people aren't doing it anymore. And they're saying, if I am in that situation, it may be a time to have an exit strategy and sell it before the market gets any worse than it is, and it is soft in the 650 and above, and move down into a smaller unit. And what we did is we moved into a townhouse, and we've been living in a rental townhouse as a real estate agent in a rental townhouse for the last few years. And it's really sort of neat. I don't have to do anything outside. If there's snow, it gets shoveled. If there's leaves, it gets raked. If the grass grows, it gets cut. When I go outside, I get the mail and I come back in. I kind of like it. I gotten used to it from living on Free Acres, where it took me 15 minutes to walk up the long driveway to get the mail and come back. And by the time I got back, I had to fix the gutter, pull the weeds, and mow the grass again. It's sort of a paradigm shift. And in order to compensate for it, we're seeing the more and more building of rental-only units in New Jersey. They're called luxury high-rises. Some are for sale, but for the most part, they're for rent. And three quarters, I've heard, of what we built in the last 12 months have been rental-only properties versus for sale properties in the format of luxury high-rises. We were in New Brunswick last week. We had to go down and see an investment counselor that had an office. And right next door, they're putting up a luxury high-rise. And this guy said, you got to go and take a look at them. So we did. Nothing to lose. It was amazing. New Brunswick, which at one point wasn't exactly where you want to live, but I think it's come back a long way, if not all the way back since then, has become a mecca for suburban living in a cosmopolitan lifestyle where you can walk to everything. You really don't need a car. You can walk to the grocery store. You can walk to 100 different places to have a drink, or a Starbucks, or a restaurant, or an outdoor cafe. You can walk 6 blocks to the train station. You can walk to Rutgers. You can walk to the library. You probably need a car, but you're not going to use it the way we used to use a car 20 to 30 years ago. When you come into that, the apartment sizes range anywhere from 800 to 1,200, same as we talked about earlier. And they are ultra-modern, and in the lobby is a 24-hour gym, a concierge service, a leaderboard that tells you what time the next train to New York is leaving and arriving, the next one from New York, a Uber leaderboard that tells you how close the nearest Uber is, and on the roof is a swimming pool, and you're in the middle of downtown New Brunswick. That is what we're seeing people looking for, more millennials than seniors, but the seniors want the same thing, but more in a rural atmosphere, because they don't need to get to New York. They just don't want to have to go outside and do any work. And while they're looking for that, seniors more to the west, millennials more to the east, we're still building Center Hall Colonials. You figure out what's going to happen. This is a collision of logic, and there's only a matter of time before it's going to have catastrophic consequences. New housing still underperforming. So analysts predict that household growth was at 1.2 million per year between 17 and will be 1.27 units per year between 2017 and 27. Single family construction, however, remained well below the long average of 1.1 million units. So the household growth is growing, but new construction is not. Home builders are trying to keep up. Single family starts rose by 8%. Well, permitting increased in 78 of the 100 largest markets. But because of the higher cost of materials, new homes are priced higher than existing homes. In April of 2018, a median home price for homes sold, this was countrywide, was $312,000. In Hunterdon County, it's about $380,000. In Somerset County, it's about $480,000. Compared to the median existing price, and I'm talking new and existing, which is quite lower. So there's more of a demand for existing homes because it's priced probably 20% under. And for the first time since 2009, the national rental vacancy rate ticking from 6.9% to 7.2%. In Hunterdon County, in central New Jersey, it's now at about 2.5 to 3.5. Most of that increase was concentrated amongst newer, higher-end cost units, which suggests the party could be about to end. So we're talking about a major league change here in logic. I know I talked to, and I had a rental in Somerset, in Somerville, in Somerset County. And it was a two-bedroom, second-floor, 100-year-old building. And the two women who rented it wanted the downtown life of Somerville. There's brews, pubs being there. There is a Starbucks. There's a parking problem. It's a typical downtown city coming to life. There's free high-rises coming in, luxury high-rises, and they just wanted to live in that environment. And one of them worked in Somerset County, one of them worked in Hunterdon County. They're a good example because I think they're typical of what's going on. And it was rent to them because they were both earning decent money. They had a good rental and a good credit history. They had a good job and salary. They had good credit scores. But this is what we're starting to see. They don't want to live out in the woods. They don't want to live out in the bucolic areas of the counties. They're thinking about living downtown because both probably late 20s, early 30s are looking for a little more social life, a little more nightlife, a little more things to do with other people of their age. And I know when we lived in Hunterdon County and Marilyn's son first came home from college, his biggest complaint was there is nothing to do here. And he went all the way back. They lived in Middlesex County when he grew up. All the time, a lot of times he stayed over if he went out at night and didn't want to risk driving back after being out. I don't think we're so far off here in Hunterdon County because when I talked to Mark Salek, he said if you want to have nothing to do, you should go to Ohio and Indiana where he grew up, and it took 2 hours to get to a McDonald's. So, okay, we don't have anything to do, and it takes 15 to 20 minutes or miles to get there. But it could be worse, but it's not where the younger generation wants to live. So you've got to look at generations as far as earning power. And within a generation, and let's take the generation that's 25 to 35, which is our millennials. They're coming of age. They're our first-time buyers. And what do they want? What they don't want is a Center Hall Colonial. What they don't want is a three-acre lot. What they don't want is a lot of yard work that eats up their discretionary time and money. What they don't want is a house that they're going to live in for 40 or 50 years like their parents or grandparents probably did. What they do want is a high rise. They don't mind spending a disproportionate amount of their rent on the high rise because they probably only need one car instead of two, and they don't need to do the outdoor work and put the money into the house that they would. They don't mind renting because millennials, for greatest extent, are not seeing themselves in a job more than 3 or 4 years. So why tie yourself up in a house? I totally disagree with that because you can earn equity for 3 or 4 years. But they don't want that. They want a cosmopolitan lifestyle. They want to get off the train. They want to walk past a Starbucks on the way to the train and pass a bakery on the way home where they can get a loaf of bread for dinner. And that's the lifestyle they want. And guess what we have then? We have a lifestyle that resembles the European lifestyle model. We have a lifestyle that represents living within a half-hour commute of where you work and probably 15 miles of where you work. And you have mass transportation getting you home. And you have mass transportation, you getting you back to work, and you're living in a bedroom community that offers more things to do and less hands-on maintenance and dollar-on maintenance than we do with four-bedroom Center Hall Colonials. We don't have that here in Hunterdon County to any great extent because we don't have mass transportation. If you get to Somerville, you're starting to see it, and that's why Somerville is building up. But if you get closer and closer to New York, you're seeing more and more. I had a rental agent call me about the same apartment in Somerville that had a cook in one of the high-end restaurants in Somerville interested in our rental. And this rental agent said she manages rentals that are within 10 or 12 miles of New York, two subway stops, Newark and one more stop. And it's less than a half hour into New York, and she was getting for 1,200 square foot rentals more like 4,000 per month, where here we're getting more like 1,800 per month. That's what's happening. It's a paradigm shift. It's a shift in thinking where the millennials are thinking, I don't need to live in rural Center Hall Colonials. I want to live closer to work. I want to be closer to the nightlife. I don't want the outdoor maintenance. I don't want what's being offered in traditional housing. But what are we building? We're building Center Hall Colonials, and we do build because we have to build on 3 acres in Hunterdon County in a lot of places, and if you build on 3 acres, you have to put up 3,200 square feet. It's not what people are looking for. On the opposite end of the spectrum are the seniors, and they're thinking, well, I could just go into Pennsylvania, 20 miles from Hunterdon County, and I could find rentals in Pennsylvania that are a fraction of what they cost me here in Hunterdon County, and to a great extent, my cost of living, if I don't have anything to do but be retired and be an active senior, will drop almost in half. We're seeing a lot of that. So we've got the millennials headed east, we've got the seniors headed west, and we got the prices in the middle at the very high end, seeing a lot of pressure because it's not like we don't have a market, we just have less of a market. That's what's happening in real estate. And at the low end, we have nothing to sell people because people are not moving up and we're not building anything new at the entry level. I'm going to be on again next week. I'm going to walk through my monthly report, which I do the first day of each new month, and we'll take you through some statistics of both Hunterdon and Somerset County. I thank you for tuning in. I'm going to play my commercial one more time, and I look forward to talking to you again at that point in time. It's always Tuesdays at 4 o'clock, and you can catch the replays on my YouTube channel. Thank you. This is Joe Peters for Coldwell Banker.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
It's Joe Peters signing out. I'll see you again next week. Thank you.
USA Radio News.
Today, President Trump presented the Medal of Honor to the late First Lieutenant Garland Connor of Kentucky. Pauline Connor, Connor's widow, accepted the award on her husband's behalf.
Although he died 20 years ago today, he takes his rightful place in the eternal chronicle of American valor. And that, as you know, is what this is. This is the great, great men and women. It's American valor.
By a 5-4 margin, the Supreme Court ruled today that President Trump's travel ban is constitutional. Senator Lindsey Graham reacted to the ruling.
What we're doing is looking at countries in a rational way. I defy anybody to tell me that any of the countries saying that the government is in control, that the vetting process works.
Your final numbers on Wall Street today: the Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 30 points to close the day at 24,283. This is USA Radio News.
Okay, so the big question for any decision you're going to make, is this actually going to work? Well, if you've heard about MediShare, which is a brilliant way of sharing healthcare costs, you may have wondered that. Does it work? Well, so did Dr. Stuart Hoover, who initially joined to save a lot of money. The typical family saves about $500 a month. Stuart saved even more.
When we first joined MediShare, we were immediately going from a little over $1,600 a month down to $460 basically a month.
So that's wonderful. But then his wife needed emergency surgery and the bills added up to $160,000.
So we were seeing the bills coming in and then the bills were being paid. Portions were being shared. And the end result of this is this bill was taken care of.
Yes, MediShare works, and it's so easy to get your questions answered too. So why not? You can call right now, 833-39-BIBLE. That's 833-39-BIBLE, 833-39-BIBLE.
California Governor Jerry Brown declared a state of emergency yesterday as wildfires forced thousands of Lake County, California residents to be evacuated. Fires have struck the area for the fourth consecutive year, and officials worry the dry conditions will make it a very tough fire season. The Supreme Court has ruled against a California law that required medically licensed pregnancy centers to tell women where to get free and low-cost abortions. USA Radio Network's John Clemens reports.
The narrow 5-4 decision means California lawmakers cannot override the First Amendment with government-mandated speech. Travis Weber, the Family Research Council, calls it a victory, but is surprised by the 5-4 decision.
This is definitely a victory for pro-life and free speech, but it is troubling that it's this narrow. It should not be this narrow. We should have every member of the court agreeing that no one should be forced to speak a message against their beliefs.
For USA Radio News, I'm John Clemens.
You're listening to USA Radio News.